So we will work to make sure that we bring football back to FIFA and FIFA back to football. We'll restore the image of FIFA. We'll make sure that everyone will be happy with what we do. But in 2020, I want to see a big development of football in all countries. And I want to see some concrete actions done by FIFA and done by each and every national association when it comes to football development.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Here for our second episode of the season. Was meant to be the first one, but it's your first of the season, isn't it, Jan? Welcome back from holiday.
Thank you very much. We've got 3 weeks off, Jan. You can go away and enjoy yourself. Okay, I'll go to Greece for a week then. That'll be wonderful. Oh, yeah, and by the way, we did one anyway. But to be fair, football was falling apart. So it did make sense to kind of make comment on that. So all is forgiven.
Yes, yeah, it was falling apart. And we needed to try and shore it up, didn't we, Terry?
Yeah, no, we needed to come on so that we could tell people what to do next.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would all be in chaos. I'm not sure anyone paid attention to us. But we certainly did tell them what to do next.
I particularly enjoyed Terry telling us how he would run FIFA, which didn't sound like it was a lot of running going involved in that.
I think the point is, no, I wouldn't run FIFA. I would allow FIFA to run itself, I would just enjoy the perks.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I have seen quite a few comments over the last week about the whole story, about it, and people saying, well, yes, the president of FIFA shouldn't be treated as a king. And really what Terry was saying was that, yes, it should be a king. It should be someone. But somebody who doesn't rule but reigns, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, that's the American-style narrative of what a king is. It's based upon old colonial narratives. And from the British point of view, a king just like rocks up and says, so good of you to come out, you know, and all of that stuff, you know, signs bills and shit like that, and generally is mostly ceremonial. So constitutional monarchy is really what I was thinking about in terms of the FIFA presidency. But with a limited term, there are directly, like the Irish presidency, I'm massively oversimplifying it, and I am not comparing the British monarchy with the Irish presidency.
You're in very deep waters
here. I wish to make
that
abundantly clear. Nevertheless, it is not...
Isn't an Englishman mansplaining to Ireland?
it's not an executive role, I think, is the point I'm trying to make, is what I'm saying here.
Yes.
More King Charles III than Henry VIII.
Yes,
indeed. And I think we should probably back away from that whole thing there.
But of course, we can't back away from the story because the story, of course, has rumbled on. And I don't want to say it's escalated, but it's certainly delineated, isn't it? It's certainly got to a stage now where battle lines have been drawn. And now we're getting to the stage where confederations are issuing joint statements. At the weekend, we had joint statement from FIFA backed by CAF and CONMEBOL, those two fine, upstanding confederations, supporting Gianni in his embattled position as FIFA president. However, on the other side of the barricades, you've got the Triple Coalition, the, how am I going to say this, CONCACAF QUEFA. Yes, I think that works, doesn't it? CONCACAF QUEFA? No?
Rolls
something
off the
like
tongue,
that. Grim. Yeah, it rolls off the tongue. Anyway, we've got to workshop that.
We'll workshop it later, mate. Yeah.
I think we'll have to. I'm sure that's what they're doing right now. What are we calling ourselves? Yes, CONCACAF, the Asian Federation, AFC, and UEFA are closing ranks and issuing their own statements, pretty much saying that Gianni has got to go. Terry, has this escalated exactly how you thought it would?
I did feel that these would be the battle lines, yeah. I felt that it would be, broadly speaking, the Global South confederations, although Asia, there's a lot of the global in Asia, I appreciate that. but large sections of the global south very much being on Gianni's side. This kind of makes a degree of sense because I think, as I said before, they're less financially independent than confederations and federations in the global north. And then I think you've then got, yeah, the UEFA, which is the big powerhouse. And then I think that the confederations are perhaps culturally, financially, spiritually look to Europe in terms of football, which I think, you know, there's an element of that with CONCACAF. I know there's elements within CONCACAF who are very, very independent, but I still feel that generally speaking, because of the power of UEFA and because of all the football that goes on there and all the money, that there still tends to be a degree of looking at UEFA. This is contradictory, of course, because there's tons of African players who are, in fact, European players. But if you're looking at in the broadest possible strokes, I think this is probably the best way to understand and explain it. And it does seem that they had indeed laid down their trenches, Graham, and are in for a bit of trench warfare. I can only hope that maybe at Christmas they might call a truce, maybe play a football match.
Oh, wouldn't it be great? Yeah, and obviously you were on holiday, but modern times being what they are, you must have been able to keep across what was going on. Did you just turn up back in Blighty on Sunday morning and suddenly think, what the hell? What's going on here?
Well, it wasn't too far from that because the internet in the part of Greece I was in was terrible. I got a little... You managed to slip through, which is you were my carrier pigeon. No, I did hear about it from you guys. All my opinions, everything, I just download straight from both of your brains. So yeah, bit of a mess, wasn't it? But you guys covered it particularly well. But to be honest with you, I thought it had the potential to cause a major schism in world football. I didn't expect it to quite be this brutal as we saw today. I thought it would be shouted down and Infantino would quietly go off. But I don't think he's going to... today is a bit different, isn't it? Because it's a huge, huge announcement from UEFA, CONCACAF and the Asian Federation, which really does put the pressure on Infantino. But as you guys touched on last week, he's gone from being bald UEFA guy, bald FIFA guy, quite affable, to hanging around with some really awful dictators who just say what they want and then ignore the consequences. And that's what makes this quite concerning, because there was no real apology in anything that FIFA said. They didn't say, we got this wrong, we read the room wrong. They talked about it, but they were saying it was more about communication than the actual idea itself of selling off the soul of football, which some of the statements I saw from UEFA while I was away was, they quite rightly pointed out that this is no one's to sell, which I thought was really beautiful. If not a little bit hypocritical coming from UEFA, who are fond of a bit of cash themselves. But it feels like they've taken a principled stance on this, but potentially it's a power player as well from them, because UEFA are, as Terry said, people look to them within the world of football. But they are only 55, I think, seats across the whole of FIFA. So changes to how the game is played or financed, they may have an opinion on that, but they can be outgunned if other federations maneuver in the opposite direction. I thought that some of the briefing that's been going on to the press about a payoff for a potential affair that Infantino had as well kind of smacked of that, that they were kind of lining themselves up for this to kind of demonize him, which he doesn't need demonizing because he does it so beautifully himself. I'm surprised it's took this long to try and unseat him, because he's made football a laughing stock. The line in the sand for me is giving Trump a peace prize. If that didn't show that the Infantino regime discredited football, I don't know what else would. That was an awful, awful thing to do. And then messing around, putting quarters into the game, the ticket pricing, which just made the game not for the people that it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the people's sport, and it can't be if a ticket's north of £10,000. That's just not normal. The Balogun affair, the allegations of favouritism for Argentina. I could go on. But all of those things in isolation are enough to remove anyone. And this conversation should have been happening well before that. Why it wasn't, I do not know. Even our own football association didn't look at all of those things and go, we need to withdraw support for this guy. It took this take or leave it, fait accompli, we're selling 20% of the World Cup to American capitalism, when in truth, they'd already sold the World Cup to American capitalism, which is what we witnessed. I mean, the sporting event itself was lovely, but the ugly side was there for everyone to see. Really, we should have seen this coming. because it was there. All the warning signs were there across the last year or so.
Terry, Jan raises some very important points there. Why has it taken them so long to do this? How much has football had to bite its lip over the last, say, year or so even? But that statement from UEFA did seem to be forgiving FIFA for things like the allocation of the World Cup to Saudi Arabia and the hosts for 2030. Of course, they are mainly UEFA for 2030 and Asia for 2034. And doesn't seem to have a problem with the expansion of the World Cup either. The real crux of the statement today really was about getting Infantino out, probably replacing him with someone from Asia or maybe from CONCACAF.
Yeah, possibly. UEFA are probably reining themselves back on things like the 64-team expansion, the stuff that you mentioned there, because these are things that they couldn't probably sit and say absolutely that they wouldn't agree to under different circumstances or do themselves. Maybe not the 64-team. They're in a strong enough position that they don't necessarily need to be hypocritical about stuff like this. You know, they are UEFA. They are quite capable of coming up with bad ideas themselves. There's no reason why they wouldn't necessarily go along with these things if the circumstances were right. If UEFA are properly consulted about stuff, then anything could happen, including a breakaway company to deal with FIFA's commercial rights. If you go things the right way, it's a bit like the European Super League. It's, you know, if you go about things the right way, you loop the stakeholders in early enough in the process, then these things actually end up getting done. It's just obviously the way in which it's done is as much the affront here as the what it is that they are doing. The reason why he's been able to get away with it for this long is simply because the coalition that he has is massive. He has a huge number of federations who back him and continue to back him and backing him now. And that was the case beforehand. And so it's very difficult, therefore, to then try and organise some kind of campaign against him when you know you've got an awful lot of work to do to persuade people why they should do that, in whose interest. And it's not enough to say what he's done here is stupid and wrong and you should, like, we should get rid of him for it. Because they say, well, right, you may well be right. He may well be stupid and wrong. But, you know, what's in it for me, Gov? You know, where's my angle? Gianni's offered me this. So why shouldn't I back him? So, you know, I think it is difficult. It's just that it's reached a point now where the situation is so desperate. Things were so close to this sell-off happening that UEFA have felt that they had to act. We talked about this last week. That they had to act and they had to take drastic action. Now that's happened, of course, they can go all in. Probably do something that they've wanted to do for years, and that's stick it to Gianni. But there hasn't really been the opportunity to build up a coalition to do that. And now there is. They're a very, very powerful coalition, a large number of member associations and no small amount of money. So I think they're well placed to have a protracted fight against him. And as we discovered and we speculated about this last Monday, Gianni is not the type to just simply, you know, walk off into the night, you know, slip away quietly. He will fight for his place, and that is what he is doing.
Yeah, and last week we talked about his credibility or how everything has fallen apart for him. The statements that FIFA have put out, you're right, he didn't really apologise for the idea, gave no assurances that it wouldn't happen again, and all he really blamed it on was, as you say, communication and processes. But he also went on in that statement to say that they did nothing wrong. And I think that's probably further enraged UEFA. But do you think that UEFA were expecting this, or do you think that they were expecting him just to get out as soon as it looked apparent that everyone would have turned against him?
Yeah, it's a really good point, that, because they went nuclear very early, saying that we won't take part in any future tournaments as long as this exists or until it's completely ruled out. I mean, that's a big card to play early on. So I think they were expecting him to be kind of a bit Trumpian about this, which is what he is, and just go, no, this is what we're doing. Or, no, we're not doing it, and there was nothing wrong with it. It was all the others. It's terrible, poor me, poor me. And blame everybody else and play the victim and say the count was wrong and all sorts of the other things. So I think that their belief was that he was going to take it to the nth degree. And I still think he will. I'm not quite sure that he will walk. He'll have to, as you said, he'll have to be dragged into a town square where there's a guillotine waiting for him, possibly. It's the people have been talking to him over the last few years, and he's been looking at those guys and seeing how they play their game, and it's just deny, deny, deny. There's nothing wrong with me. It's everybody else. They parked their tanks on his lawn really, really early, so I think that they were ready for it. I mean, what we're seeing is seismic. I mean, yeah. This makes the Super League discussions just look like child's play.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about football splitting potentially into two administrations, and then you've got two different sports, potentially. This is a big deal.
Yeah, I think what we'll have in 5 years' time, we will have two half football and four quarter football, maybe. Maybe that's what we'll be looking at. I don't dismiss it.
Yeah.
We've got to a stage now where Gianni already knows where his bunker's going to be, and it's in Rabat in Morocco, isn't it? It's that's where he decided to hold his emergency meeting rather than go into his rather swanky offices in Zurich. He didn't really take many people out with him, so he is certainly hunkering down. Do you think a split is likely? Do you think a split is the only way that football's going to go? Or do you think once it becomes apparent that UEFA and the AFC and CONCACAF are serious about this, then CAF and CONMEBOL will soon go, yeah, okay, look, there's no party without those guys, so sorry, Gianni, you're toast.
It's definitely a possibility. Nothing is inevitable, and this is not inevitable, but we do see sports split in similar fashion for maybe not exactly the same reasons, but for similar reasons. Perhaps, dare I say, minor sports, but, you know, boxing, for example, just how divided is that? Rugby is a great example, rugby union and rugby league. And those two sports play different variations of the code. And the idea of maybe a four, as you say, Graham, a four quarter football and a two half football is something that we could see sort of to delineate between, you know, whatever the new UEFA confederation is and whatever FIFA confederation is. It all depends on just how far the UEFA coalition, if we can call it that, just how far UEFA, CONCACAF and AFC are willing to go, just how far they're willing to travel down here. Are they prepared to set up a rival intercontinental championship based, I don't know, say on the Nations League or something like that, or an expanded version thereof? You know, are they willing to actually say, you know what, we are, for one, we're not sending our teams to FIFA competitions, and also we're not sending our UEFA registered or our registered players to the national teams, and we're going to set up our own thing, and we're going to do it that way. We're going to go like full PDC BDO in the darts and just like take them head on and see who wins. But the levels of commitment to undertake something like that are extraordinary. I mean, you're talking about stress, grief, anxiety, money, and just huge amounts of bad feeling and acrimony to do something like that. Even if they boycott, that's still going to be, it's still, for everyone concerned, it's going to be really, really stressful if they see that through. So I think the hope is, well, I hope this doesn't happen at all, but probably the most elegant, least grievesome way out of this is UEFA boycott the women's Under 20 World Cup, is it, Graham,
right,
in Poland?
Yep.
Thank you.
Next
month. Boycott that. And then boycott the qualification playoffs as well, if indeed it comes to that. That will demonstrate to FIFA and the member associations that support Gianni Infantino that they're serious and that they mean this. And if this is what they want, then this is what's going to happen. But if both sides still seem firmly entrenched, and if the FIFA side seem firmly entrenched in their positions, then I'd start organising in rival international tournaments, is what I would do. I'd really, really go for it.
Yeah.
Because I think when you start to go down that road, then really the pressure is on, the massive pressure. Because what we haven't heard too much about at this point is the sponsors of the big FIFA tournaments. I feel that they are kind of keeping their powder dry on this one. But what on earth are they going to think if the big European nations, not to mention the big Asian nations and the CONCACAF nations, are not, you know, participating in these events? That's obviously, it's going to be a financial catastrophe for FIFA. And a number of those will say, well, actually, you guys are in breach of our agreement, and, you know, we're going off, and yeah, maybe what we'll do is we're going to sign up with this tournament over here that UEFA are hosting, you know, in Germany in the summer, an intercontinental women's championship next summer. between CONCACAF, UEFA, and Asia. I'd watch that tournament.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would, and I'd certainly watch an intercontinental men's tournament. Mind you, I'd watch any bloody football. I literally went to see Bromley versus Reading at the weekend in the Carabao Cup, so I will watch any fucking football.
Yes, yes, yes. We totally did that, listeners. We were with a good friend of the show, Rob Langham, and we enjoyed ourselves in the sunshine and watched a penalty shootout, didn't we?
We sure did. It was terrific. Yeah, it was terrific.
It's a shame that it has to be the women's football that becomes the first battlegrounds for this conflict, but it was always going to be landing on someone's doorstep. Poland have been preparing to stage an under-20 Women's World Cup, and now we're a month away from it, and it looks like it just isn't going to happen. But yeah, and I suppose that's it. When you press the nuclear button, you've got to follow through with it, haven't you? You can't just say, okay, yeah, this is going to be bad news for people, but yeah, you just say, right, well, there's no show, is there?
Yeah, exactly. I think that if they didn't send their teams to the under-20 Women's World Cup, the scale of that tournament compared to the scale of the men's tournament, and I know how that sounds, but it is what it is. It means that they can make their point in a relatively minor tournament. If they'd done that and it was a bigger scale tournament, people within football may well have gone, oh, you've taken this too far. You need to have found a middle ground. But with this, so they can actually fire shots.
Yeah.
And make a lot of noise and show that they're serious. So while it is a huge shame for everyone that's involved in the World Cup in Poland, I think that it's sadly become expendable in the wider play, if you like, to win this particular struggle. You're right, as it stands, if there's no progress made in the next couple of weeks, then that's not happening. Not happening at all. And that will show that they're mega serious. And the next time a higher status competition comes along, then they can say, well, look, we did everything we could. We tried incremental boycotting. And so kind of a canny play from UEFA. I mean, it's fallen right for them, to be fair. But, you know, the overall struggle, I mean, the biggest struggle here, let's be honest here, the biggest struggle here is what happens to the World Cup in 4 years' time.
Yeah.
How is that played?
Yeah.
I know there are other tournaments that they all matter. Football matters regardless of the level. But that's the one that really matters, and not having European teams there, I mean, it's inconceivable.
Yeah,
it's not a World Cup. You can have the South American teams there. There's some great teams there. You can have the African teams there. There's some great teams there. But that's not the World Cup. It has to have all of the teams from everywhere there. I actually find it quite angering, if I'm honest with you, that Infantino didn't, in his guise, didn't think that there was going to be a problem with this. I mean, that shows the arrogance and who's been whispering in his ear that he's that's made him do this. It reminds me of the saying, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, those who the gods seek to destroy first, they make arrogant or mad, but it's the same thing. And it feels like Infantino is just destroying himself with his own hubris.
So I guess that makes Gianni Garth of Izar, doesn't it, Terry?
I guess it does. That'll be Lord Garth to you, Graham. Lord Garth. It's whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad, is the exact line. And there's an episode of Star Trek called Whom Gods Destroy, featuring a megalomaniacal bald guy who takes over a lunatic asylum.
My God, that's brilliant.
You don't know how on the nose you were there.
You were massively on the nose there. That was so beautiful.
So, Terry, you've got this escalation, this natural escalation that UEFA have got, this long ramp to the next World Cup. The first casualty is going to be the under-20 Women's World Cup. The next casualty is going to be in the summer, and that's going to be a joint one because that's going to be the Women's World Cup. This is going to have a big impact. And I think as much as that as well, you've got AFCON next summer. And if UEFA are serious about this, they can say to all their member clubs, don't give up any of your players to go to AFCON.
Which is what they should do.
If the dividing line has been made, then Ligue 1 goes, brilliant, we don't have to give up a third of the playing population of this tournament, and they can just have a normal summer off. But yeah, I think those are the two big battle lines that are coming up, and that's where CAF is probably going to stall on this.
I wonder what happens with the player, because the players are going to want to play at AFCON.
Yeah.
Hang about, this is a big deal for me and for us. I'm going.
Yeah.
You're not going, I mean, what the hell happens then?
Well, yeah.
This is one of the many potential tensions in the coalition and pain points in the coalition is the players' reaction to this. It's like saying, what do you mean I don't get to play in AFCON? Because it's a really, really big deal to play in that tournament for African players. So that's why, and this is also where I think it all goes, is that UEFA, we're going to have to do what bosses really don't like doing, and that's probably having a conversation with the unions. Then the players' unions and FIFPro really need to be dialed into this coalition, because they will need their help on trying to keep the players on side in any action that takes place. Because, yeah, I feel that probably what is the more likely scenario is that they will not send UEFA teams to FIFA competitions, but they will allow players who are national team members from outside of UEFA to participate in those tournaments. So they will allow players to participate in the Copa America, and they will allow them to participate in AFCON, because I think it's the best and most pragmatic way of keeping the players on side through this. Because if the players say, wait a minute, then really we're all in trouble, because those are the guys who literally play the football.
Well, FIFPro have come up with a statement, and they've come up with, I think, the best statement.
It's a doozy.
It's a doozy. If you've not seen FIFPro's statement from, I think it came out Friday, listeners, I really suggest you read it, because it goes right to the heart of it, and it takes absolutely no prisoners at all. And it goes straight at Gianni Infantino. And it basically sets out a manifesto for the future of football, doesn't it? Not perhaps the way that UEFA would want it, but certainly leading on player welfare and decision making, certainly wanting FIFPro representation on the FIFA council as well, which was an interesting thing. But why not? These are the guys with the ball at their feet, and these are the guys that the people turn up to see. So why not?
These are the workers.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are the workers. It's this mirrors capitalism, isn't it? It is like these decisions are being made by people who are not the people who have to do the work. The most important people in the whole realm of football are the people who play the football, and the second most important people are the people who officiate the football. I mean, without them, we haven't got a game. I mean, even fans, yeah, oh yeah, football without fans is nothing. Organised professional football without fans is nothing, but the actual game itself, and these guys don't have a say necessarily. I mean, they earn a lot of money, and they're not necessarily not the same as like workers that Karl Marx had in mind or Friedrich Engels had in mind, but then nevertheless that relationship is the same, and no matter how well they're paid, that relationship is still the same. It's the bosses who make these decisions, and it's the players who have to go along with it. So FIFPro have wisely and very eloquently and very beautifully outlined what they think should happen next, and yes, they are making a pitch. This is their opportunity to pitch for representation, for player representation at the absolute top of the game, which they should have had from the very beginning. But, you know, utopia doesn't exist, guys. But after we've smashed capitalism, then that's the kind of thing that we would be doing. Everyone should be living like that. But this is FIFPro's opportunity, I think, to get in. And I feel, and I'm concerned this won't happen, but I feel that the UEFA coalition, their next bet would be to talk to FIFPro and say, right, you come in with us and we'll all decide this together. We'll all act in concert together. And if you do that, then they really will. I mean, you know, not every individual player will agree with the decisions that are made. But generally speaking, footballers tend to show a great deal of solidarity with their players' union. So it would be a massive step forward and actually could pave the way for a better future, a genuinely better future. This could easily go terribly wrong with a divided and riven culture and rival competitions going on that takes years to sort out. But it could actually, if it's played properly, could actually lead us to sunlit uplands, guys.
Agreed. There's a really interesting, I mean, I won't go into everything that they talk about in the future of football, but I mean, it's been touched on a lot by anyone who knows anything about the game, but they've clearly called out they want football stakeholders to have influence on international match calendars, competition expansion, and anything that fundamentally changes the way the game is played. And the fact that the actual players, the workers in this industry, aren't being consulted on that already is absolutely crazy. So, yeah, I think you're right, Terry, that the smart move is that UEFA says, okay, you can come with us and we'll give you whatever you want. There's a compromise. There's a deal to be done. but just don't go with Infantino's guys. We're already starting to talk about what the world looks like when this split happens, which is quite possibly inevitable.
I think it's over 50% chance that there's going to be a split that could take years to heal.
Yeah.
If ever.
Given what UEFA have said, though, in their statement, I just think that what they really want is just the death of the Club World Cup. They want FIFA to get away from club football, move away completely. And after that, I think they'll be fine about letting the next guy go in and just being a president in the same way that Infantino or Blatter or Havelange was beforehand. And I think that just stinks. I think UEFA, you're right, they don't want anyone to mess what they've got going on. So they can't really be too much, let's raise everything to the ground and rebuild in a much better, more democratic way, because I don't think they want that at all. And I don't think they want players to have too much power either.
No, I think that illustrates the difficulty and the pain points in that coalition. I think there is an opportunity to make a better football, but I think that, like, you know, with a lot of revolutions, the people in charge of it actually don't need or want much. They just want to have the power. They don't necessarily want those power structures to alter fundamentally. They just want to be the guys in control. And I think that that's probably, you're right, that's probably UEFA's angle, is that they want to have a lot more control. Whereas there's an opportunity to put the workers in a position where they have a great deal more power in how the international game, and indeed the game, is governed and the direction that it goes in. But it will be squandered, because that is life.
Yeah, there's also a thing as well, is they don't really go into too much detail of what stakeholders actually means. That could actually include players, but it could also include their representatives as well. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm not proposing or suggesting that FIFA is going to be replaced by a bunch of regional Soviets. although it should. But I'm not suggesting that and I'm not suggesting that that's what FIFA Pro want either. That's just what I want.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of frozen Russia in the 1920s and them calling around their agent just to see what they can get out of centralised government. So there you go, listeners. That's our plan for curing all of football's ills. What's your plan?
Should it be workers' Soviets?
I'd wear a T-shirt for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Northern Europe, workers' Soviets.
I would suggest that a football Soviet Union is bad optics, because I'm not proposing the Soviet Union. But yeah, the workers control the game. That is what I'm proposing.
It's also a bit unfortunate that the first battleground happens to be Poland as well. So that's...
It just gets worse.
It does get worse.
If you're bad optics.
But no, but only if you can insist upon looking at it from the point of view of the Soviet Union rather than workers' Soviets.
I think you need to workshop that as well,
things.
Terry. I
don't need to workshop it, guys. I don't need to workshop it. I'm clear. It's you guys that need to do the workshopping. And I'm ready to help you through this anytime you wish. Poland, if the Women's Under-20 World Cup doesn't happen, Poland should be rewarded with a major international final, or even hosting like the Intercontinental Nations League Final Four or Final Eight tournament, or wherever it comes out, as a kind of, you know, compensation for missing out on hosting this tournament. Look after people who are having to sacrifice. You know, here's an opportunity to pump a load of money into a women's game, because they're being messed around. Once again, women being messed around because of decisions made by men. It's just life, guys, isn't it?
It is.
It's just life.
It is.
what we're seeing.
Yes.
Is life.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in.
Yes.
And it's really depressing.
It is. It's just the fact that we care more about football than actual important stuff. So it only takes this for us to get angry and start talking about things and push for change. Yes, we're pathetic, aren't we?
No, it's because this is the platform that we have, and so it's the best way of expressing it there. Otherwise, we're just three dudes talking nonsense. But because it's about football, it's not talking nonsense, because we have a modicum of credibility. I admit my whole Soviet work of Soviet things may have undermined that credibility, but nevertheless, I feel certain that the regular listeners understand where I'm coming
yes,
from.
Yes, the regulars do. And Jan, they will know that I should have started these questions with, other than smash capitalism, what should we do?
I think maybe that's how you should profess every question you put for Terry from now on in. Attractive as it is, I just think the Soviet thing just needs a little bit of polish, I think,
yes,
to bring the rest of the people on board.
Well, listeners, again, the whole story of FIFA has meant that time has run away from us, and so we've not been able to do anything that we were going to do in this episode, which is going to be a wider update of what happened in the summer and what it means for football for the new season, because the new season will start, well, already has started. As Terry said, we went to go and see some League Cup last Saturday. The EFL starts this weekend, and the traditional curtain is being raised at Wembley as well, with Arsenal playing City in the Community Shield. The season basically starts this weekend, doesn't it? And so, yes, a box set will be coming out this weekend. If you're new listeners, hello. Thank you for coming along. Yes, it is like this pretty much every week. And yes, how I finish up every week throughout the season, except on international breaks. We don't do box sets on international breaks for some reason. Yeah, every week I finish up by talking about a little brief introduction to the football that we'll be watching at the weekend. And we do that by producing a newsletter on Substack, which gives you a little preview of 7 of the games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. It's free, yes, completely free, and we won't spam you or anything like that. All you got to do is go to sofpodcast.com and sign up. It's the link's on there. But what will we be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, this weekend, as I said, you've got the Charity Shield. We've also got the Women's AFCON final is on Sunday as well, and will be on Channel 4. Finally, Terry. Channel 4 have decided to show some. God knows what happened there with the TV rights. CAF obviously thought that Channel 4 were into it a bit more, but Channel 4 just a bit cool about the whole thing, weren't they?
Yeah, and judging by some of the commentary on some of those earlier rounds, Channel 4 might have done the right thing there. It's not a polished presentation, WAFCON. Let's hope that changes over time as more money comes into the production. But it might have been a bit optimistic, I guess, for Channel 4 to show the whole tournament, but it's good that they're showing the latter stages.
Yeah, and you're going to be covering Leicester's first game in League One. I should think you've probably got a few words of wisdom for Leicester fans facing up to life in League One.
Yeah, so for people that are only aware that Sunderland came into existence last season, we'll be stunned to know that we spent a few seasons in League One on 2 separate occasions. But yeah, I suppose the question is, has Leicester suffered enough? And the answer to that, as a sneak preview, is no, they haven't.
Well, there you go, listeners. There you go. This is the type of insight you get in the weekend box set. So, as I said, get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe to our Substack. And it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Yes. Yep. Yeah, it will be. It will
sure.
be.
Sure. Friday lunchtime, as always.
As always. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fallon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
And last week, down here, we actually had some rain.
Oh my
word. Why is that?
Water fell from the sky.
What? You ever heard of something so ridiculous as that?
Indeed.
Water doesn't belong in the sky, Terry.
I'm telling you now, water fell from the skies. I mean, obviously, we're from
Fake
Sussex.
News.
So we all slaughtered some livestock as sacrifice to the gods.
Yeah, obviously.
Because they were punishing us with this water from the sky, even though actually we were all quite pleased to see it.
I mean, there you were, minding your own business,
yeah,
dancing naked around your stone circles.
Yeah, yeah.
as you do in Sussex.
As we do. We have no idea what an absolute ball ache it is that I had to put clothes on to do this podcast.
Oh, I do, Terry, I do.